This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When there is a healthcare emergency, every second counts. You want to get that medical treatment to you as fast as possible. But what happens when you are in a remote part of Texas and there's an accident, maybe a snake bite, a heart attack, a stroke, and the hospital that used to be in town closed down months ago, and now the nearest trauma center is over an hour's drive away? What happens then? People die. We are now in the midst of a crisis of rural hospitals, which is hitting states like Texas hard, the states that did not expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And things just keep getting worse for rural health care. It's going to take direct and focused policy changes in Austin and D.C. to fix this, but it doesn't seem like the political climate is in the mood for that. So what do you think? What have you seen happening to rural health care? What solutions would you like to see put in place? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet us at @tprsource. We have in the studio with us for the hour, Billy Bell. She's the Vice President of Operations at the Medina Regional Hospital. That's in Hondo, right up the road. And on the line with us is Bill Hanna. He joins us. He's a reporter for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. He's been covering this issue. He wrote a really good piece on this recently. And Bill and Billy, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Billy Bell over at the Medina Regional Hospital in Hondo. Tell me about your operation.
So Medina Regional Hospital is a 25-bed critical access hospital, and we have been providing hospital and healthcare services to our community since 1964, and we're very proud of the services that we offer. We have full-service inpatient, outpatient units. We have three rural health clinics that provide primary care services to people in our communities. We also have a level 4 trauma certification for our emergency department, and we actually see a good number of patients in our ED, about 1,000 a month.
So, and you're county-owned?
We are a county-owned facility.
So you have a hospital district?
Yes, we do.
All right. And so you've been reading about, you read Bill Hanna's piece, Fort Worth Star-Telegram, about rural hospitals in trouble. Your hospital, not on that list, but what do you can relate to what they're going through?
Oh, definitely. I mean, his article was spot on. All rural hospitals are facing similar challenges, whether you're in the red or not at this time. And so it's something that concerns all of us in rural healthcare. I mean, we're primarily focused on providing healthcare services for those rural areas, many of which are very rural. We're luckily, you know, about 45 minutes from San Antonio, but a lot of rural hospitals have over an hour or even more before they can get to a larger tertiary center.
Bill Hanna at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, why should someone who does not live in a rural area, who lives in a big city with lots of hospitals, why should they worry about these rural hospitals?
Well, I think you should worry if you're ever going to, you know, take a road trip, especially if you go out somewhere west of San Antonio or west of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Like we highlighted in my story, there was an incident of a family here from Grapevine, which is right by DFW Airport, whose son had a rattlesnake bite. And fortunately,
he was like a little toddler kid.
Yeah, he was 2 years old. And, you know, they got in the car. The mom was a nurse. They got on the phone and were greeted first by firefighters driving into the town of Childress, kind of in the southeastern corner of the panhandle. And they got there and then were flown to Dallas. But like they said, if they had been an hour or two away from a hospital, it might have been a different story. That kid's fine, but he may not have been fine if he'd been, you know, 50 miles in another direction.
So you or someone you know or love could be in the rural areas exploring some of our remote, beautiful parts of Texas, and something bad could happen to them. And will they be out of luck or not? Is it just a throw of the dice, Bill?
I think it is a throw of the dice. In the same story, we talked about some incidents in the next county further away where there was somebody in August who had an allergic reaction to a wasp sting, and they were about 60 miles from a hospital. They didn't make it, and there was one a few years ago where a man had a heart attack, and he got loaded in an ambulance, but he had to make the 60-mile drive into Childress, and he didn't make it. So, yeah, I think it is in some degrees a roll of the dice.
So we just saw recently, last month, that the hospital in Wharton, Texas, which is on the Gulf Coast, they had to shut down. So I'm having trouble keeping up with the numbers, but it looks like 12 rural hospitals have closed in the last 2 years, Bill?
You may be counting in a little different way. It was like 15 since 2013 is what we said in our story, and Wharton happened right about the time we went to press. And then some of them still try and open and, you know, just keep open some sort of ER facility. But, from what the rural hospital folks were telling me, depending on what happens with funding, you could see more closing in the next year or two, depending on what happens with funding.
So what is the critical factor? Why are the walls closing in on these rural hospitals?
I think it's a variety of factors. I mean, I think in every hospital is a case-by-case basis, but some are very reliant on Medicare and Medicaid, as you said at the top of the program, and others may have difficulty, you know, keeping or staffing or keeping an ER open 24 hours a day. And some of it's just population. You know, some of these areas are emptying out. We've kind of got a big empty going on in some parts of these states, so it makes it very difficult to keep the doors open.
So these rural hospitals are being hit from all angles. And Billy Bell over at the Medina Regional Hospital, do you see that your population is especially vulnerable, that they really depend upon the services that you provide?
We do, and even though we're not that far from San Antonio, I can share with you a story. We had a patient about a year ago came in with stroke symptoms, and we do have a telestroke robot in our emergency department. We were able to hook him to the telestroke robot, which gives access to a neurologist immediately, do a CT scan, and found that he was having an occlusive stroke, and that's the type of stroke that can be treated with clot-busting drugs. However, there's a very short window of time, 3 hours from your symptom onset. So luckily, we were able to hang that TPA, that medication for him, fly him on a chopper and get him to San Antonio, and 6 weeks later, he had no symptoms from that stroke. But if he had had to get into the car and drive himself, or if we weren't there to start that TPA, he may not have had that outcome.
Yeah, and strokes, that's when seconds really count, because if you don't get them assistance immediately, then it just becomes worse and harder to recover from. So Billy Hanna over at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, tell me about the reaction you've gotten to your story.
I've heard from a lot of folks. I heard from some of them in the hospital industry, heard from some rural doctors, and even heard from a nurse practitioner who said, look, I'm the only one of these counties because there's no doctors here. So I think in the rural areas, this is appreciated. I think in the metropolitan areas, maybe not as much. I think, many people, it's an afterthought unless they're going out into these rural counties.
So, but people should care also on a humanitarian level that we people should have access to health care. We shouldn't just write off like just under a fifth of the state's population to saying, well, you're on your own.
Absolutely. I think that that's an issue, but I think it's also one other side of the coin of this is doctors. There's a doctor shortage, and that's especially acute in rural areas. So you've also, even if you've got a hospital, you've got to attract physicians out there. And in some places that are pretty remote out there, that's not an easy task.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that in the next segment. We're going to be visiting with the doctors from Texas Tech University as they look at a program to bring doctors into the rural areas. Hard to train, hard to attract and keep the doctors in that. So I want to thank you, Bill Hanna, Fort Worth Star-Telegram, for your excellent reporting on how rural hospitals across the state are in crisis. And we're going to continue our conversation. Billy Bell is going to stay with us for the entire hour. She's the Vice President of Operations at the Medina Regional Hospital in Hondo. And our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you what you have to say about this situation and what kind of fix you would like to see put in place. The number to call is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our conversation about the challenges for rural health care. A record number of rural hospitals are closing across the nation and here in Texas. The latest number is about 15 for the last 2 years in the state. That's bad news. Also, there's a problem attracting primary care doctors in small towns across the state. 35 Texas counties have zero doctors. That's according to the North Texas Regional Extension Center, and 80 counties have five or fewer doctors. Texas Tech University is working on a solution. We're bringing in Dr. Stephen Burke into the conversation. He's the Executive Vice President, Provost, and Dean at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center School of Medicine. And Dr. Burke, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Glad to be talking with you.
So describe the situation.
Well, first of all, definitely agree that rural hospitals are in desperate need. And while there's many different factors to that, certainly one of the issues and the issue that medical schools are most interested in and can do most about is to try to have a line of primary care physicians. And so at Texas Tech School of Medicine, we have one of the most innovative programs in the country to try to get more students into family medicine. And particularly in Texas, the key is to get students who want to do family medicine. If you look at these towns of 25 or 35,000 or less, the only doctors that are going to be in those towns are family physicians. So we have a program that's been successful, doesn't solve the problem of rural health hospitals, but we do have a program that's been very successful to get more students into primary care and into family medicine.
Remember the old TV show, Northern Exposure? That was a long time ago, probably showing up my age, where, you know, the Dr. Fleshman from New York had to go become a doctor in this small town in Alaska in order to get a scholarship to get through medical school. I mean, is that something that could be a possible solution?
I mean, that's one possible solution. I don't think that ever worked out that well, because usually there was a time limit, so you gave 2 years or 3 years, and then you were gone. I think the better solution is really getting students who want to do family medicine. You can find some of these students in small towns to begin with, so we're always looking for students who come to medical school wanting to do primary care and maybe wanting to go back to a small town. Our program is unique in that students can graduate after 3 years and go into our three-year family medicine residency program, and we give a scholarship in the first year. There's no fourth year, and so their debt is very, very small when they're done with the 6 years, 3 years of medical school, 3 years of residency. We bring that debt down to $15,000 or $20,000, where some medical students have a debt of $200,000 or more. It's not that all medical students want to be rich, but medical students, if they see they've got a $200,000 debt when they graduate medical school, they may choose a field that's more lucrative than family medicine.
Right. So how is that working? Are you finding the recruits that you need, looking for people who come from the rural areas that have the aptitude and the desire and the determination to do it, and then they come out and they can go back to maybe even their hometown and become the local doctor?
I mean, we've been somewhat successful. Actually, Texas Tech, now we're ranked 12th in the country in the percentage of students that go into family medicine. And that's because of our Family Medicine Accelerated Track, but also because we've tried to increase the level of prestige of family medicine. You know, we're not a medical school where we're telling our students, don't go into family medicine, it's beneath you. Unfortunately, that happens, you know, at some other, potentially at some other schools. So we're trying to give it a high level of prestige. We're trying to choose students who have come from small towns or maybe have a hero family medicine doc. And like I say, by doing this program in 6 years and really dramatically decreasing debt, we are getting more students to go into family medicine. Now, there's 11 other medical schools that are looking at a similar type program. And certainly Texas Tech is not going to solve the problem of trying to get family physicians into all of these small towns, but perhaps with more and more programs that are trying to attract students specifically to family medicine, we can help solve some of these issues.
So Billy Bell, Vice President of Operations at the Medina Regional Hospital in Hondo, has this been a problem for y'all?
It has been. We struggle with physician recruitment for the very same reasons Dr. Burke mentioned. Many people choose a different field. They're not interested in family medicine. And I think that Texas Tech's idea of really targeting, looking for small town students that want to become doctors and go back to their towns or a small town is brilliant. We have several primary care physicians in our clinics and hospital system that grew up in Hondo and have come back to practice. And so they have roots in the area. They understand family medicine, and it's their passion.
So what about your recruitment? You having problems there?
We are having problems with recruitment. We've been struggling for over a year trying to find a general surgeon, and it's something we always look at. We want to bring as many services as possible to the residents of the county, and so it's something that we continually work on.
So a general surgeon, that doesn't fit under the family medicine thing, does it, Doc?
No.
So that's a different
thing.
Point
because, well, yes. I mean, first of all, everybody's going to need a primary care physician. That's sort of the bedrock of trying to have good health care in these smaller towns. But that's not necessarily enough. And most small hospitals, rural hospitals, you know, if they have a surgery program, that is going to really help guarantee the success of that hospital. But also difficult to recruit general surgeons to a small town. And obviously there needs to be more trying to develop collaborative effort systems where perhaps surgeons can work in an academic environment but also be available certain days of the week in smaller hospitals. There's some of that that goes on with us, and that's probably a partial solution. But you need the primary care physician in the small town, in the rural hospital, to begin to think about then getting general surgeons and other specialists to participate in healthcare as well.
Yeah, well, I hear that if you are the primary care doctor for that county, and I'm reading that Live Oak County has no physician at all, 1,100, almost 1,200 people there, and no, and that's not that far from here, and it seems well like a well-trafficked county, no doctor there. But if you're the doctor there, you're on call all the time. Everyone is depending upon you. I mean, you really have to be dedicated.
That's very true, and it's not for everybody, but there are a lot of different types of physicians that take call every night. They're going to need some kind of help, some kind of relief, someone that's going to cover for them at certain times of the year. And then, of course, we can build a network where a family medicine physician can work with advanced practitioners, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and try to develop a team. I think that's part of the key in the smaller hospitals as well, that everything can't be on the shoulders of the primary care physician, but there needs to be a team that can work together.
So, Billy Bell, what are y'all doing with this lack of a general surgeon?
So hopefully we're really close to finding one, but it's something we work at constantly. I mean, it's something our administration team focuses on because, again, we want to provide the highest level of care and services that we can to the community.
So, I mean, is it someone who would be doing elective surgery, but people instead choose to come to another hospital, maybe to San Antonio, or you want them or having it locally is a benefit to them?
It's a benefit. I mean, we see a lot of things come into the emergency department that we could handle in-house if we had a surgeon available, but you can't sit on somebody who has appendicitis, and so those things have to get transferred out. It may be something, though, that we could ease that burden of transferring and take care of that patient where they live.
So Dr. Stephen Burke over at Texas Tech in Lubbock, you know, Lubbock, you're not a small town, you're a big city, but you're kind of surrounded by a lot of small towns. Is that why you think you're a good fit for trying to come up with this program?
Yes, and we work together with various hospitals. We have faculty that go to Childress, that go to other rural hospitals. It's not difficult to send faculty to small towns for clinics. It's just the 24/7 call becomes very difficult. We do have a new surgery residency program in the Permian Basin that is trying to attract surgical residents who are interested in rural health care, and they'll be doing some of their surgery in Alpine and in other small hospitals. So there's a lot that the academic medical center can do, but certainly not resolve all of the different problems that that we're seeing in these rural health, small rural hospitals. But I think the academic medical center can be working with small hospitals to see just how much they might be able to do to ease the burden.
Do you think that a lot of these students choose to go into primary care because this really is, you know, you feel a great sense of accomplishment by being that doctor for that community?
Exactly. And it's really interesting because when the students come to medical school, most of them want to be some type of primary care doctor. Most of them think of the nobility of a physician as someone that's going to see patients over time. Very few medical students come into medical school wanting to be an anesthesiologist or a pathologist or even an orthopedic surgeon. They develop that interest over time. They get the idea that in many cases, you know, this is an easier lifestyle and maybe even more lucrative. But the basic feeling of wanting to take care of patients over time, like a pediatrician or a family medicine or a general internist does, that's what students come in, that's the interest students come in with. So to some extent, we need to make sure they don't lose that while they go through the 4 years of medical school.
But we also know that doctoring is not just all about doctoring. There's also the business side of it, and is it easier to become a specialist? You can join a group. If you're going to be the only county doctor, you've got to figure out a way to still pay the bills.
That's exactly right, and it's much more difficult. Now, the healthcare system may be changing over time so that there may be advantages to the primary care physicians as compared to specialists in some of the new payment models. If patients are seen as their payments in a bundle rather than by how many different procedures are being done, once that changes and the emphasis is not on fee-for-service or on procedures,
Then maybe we'll see some improvement in this area. Okay, I got you, Dr. Burke. I got to let you go. We're out of time. We're going to be back with more after this NPR news break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Rural hospitals are in crisis in the state. A shortage of primary care doctors outside the big cities and cuts to healthcare funding from the state and the federal government. What to do about this? We're continuing our conversation. We're going to be hearing from David Pearson in a bit. He is the president and CEO of Torch, Texas Organization of Rural and Community Hospitals. He's at the forefront trying to raise awareness about the problem and coming up with a solution. But also with me to continue this conversation is Billy Bell, the Vice President of Operations at Medina Regional Hospital in Hondo. And so let's take a caller here. The number to call in if you got a question or comment is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Claiborne is on the line. Claiborne, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just recertified in pediatric and adult first aid, CPR, and AED. I'm signed up to take the instructor course. I used to teach first aid and common task skills in the Army. Army 18 Deltas can basically do, like, almost major surgery in the field. That's an option to fill in this gap, especially with current technology, but then you run into, like, some of the cellular gaps and stuff in states like Texas. But, you know, you lay people who can do enough to check in on people and or make the call to call in, you know, like connect with a doctor somewhere, send the telemetry, like these are the vitals, so forth and so on. Should this person go now kind of thing, as opposed to somebody, you know, like my late mother in her 70s, like bundling her up just to take her to the doctor if that was unnecessary was potentially more risky than trying to treat her at home. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, Claiborne, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. So he brings up a lot of interesting points there, Billy. One of them is about trying to do Army-style medical care out into the rural areas. And that's not health care. That's triage. That's the way to deal with an emergency. But on a day-to-day basis, people need to see your doctor on a regular basis and have someone who knows them, be able to treat them and their entire being, because it is a wholeness as well as wellness.
That is true. You're right. And that's the key role that primary care physicians play. They are taking care of patients from birth to death and all aspects along the continuum, mental health needs, physical needs, you name it.
Right. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment as we talk about rural health care in the state of Texas and how we're seeing a number of hospitals close down, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. 15 rural hospitals have shut down in the state in the last 2 years. The most recent one is in Wharton, Texas, which is on the Gulf Coast. They put up a big red sign on their front door. It says the Wharton Hospital is closed, the Gulf Coast Medical Center. They're sending their residents over to El Campo Memorial, and which is more than a half an hour away. And this is not only bad news for people who want to receive that health care, but it's also bad news for the local economy there. When a hospital like this closes down in a town, frequently that hospital is a big job provider and provides some level of security for that town, and it is a big red flag that that town is on the decline. So, Billy Bell, how many employees y'all have at the Medina Regional Hospital in Hondo?
We have about 250 employees, and we are one of the largest employers in Medina County.
And so, I mean, I know that you guys are in good shape and nothing is going to interrupt your services that you provide there, but you can just imagine that how another hospital in another county, if they were shut down, that how catastrophic that would be for the local economy.
Oh, you're right. It not only impacts the healthcare of the community, but the lives of those. And you need healthcare for a thriving, healthy community. And if you don't have access to care, that does not exist.
So people will decide, I can't move here. There's no doctor. There's no hospital. Or there are people who are aging. They're banged up after a lifetime of working on the ranch. You know, that gate can come back and swing at you. It's pretty hard sometimes. You know, all sorts of, and these people are older and they're vulnerable. And it's, I can't live here anymore. I got to move. I got to get closer to the big city where I can get healthcare.
That's true. Or the alternative, and what happens many times, is they just don't seek care. And that's just a tragedy.
And that's when things really take a turn for the worse. Let's get another caller on the air. We have Daniel. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I just had a comment, and I have a number of things I want to talk about, but I'll stick to my main point. There's not enough primary care physicians. So one of the possible solutions that I've talked about, I'm pretty young and a lot of my friends are going into medical school, is reduce the workload on primary care physicians by transferring a lot of that responsibility to nurses and PAs. These are pretty dedicated and smart professionals who can handle a lot of the day-to-day that primary care physicians have to go through. And by transferring that, you can increase the amount of patient throughput you can handle while also reducing the amount of, I want to say, boring work that primary care physicians handle. And therefore, you also make the career more incentivizing to new physicians who don't want to have to do the rote, routine, boring things that primary care physicians are infamous for.
Okay, Dan. Thank you for that call. Appreciate it. So, Billy Bell, is that something that you considered?
Well, we do utilize nurse practitioners and physician assistants in our clinics, and they're integral members of the healthcare team. So I think it's very smart to look at different models and how you can provide care to help offset some of the workload for primary care physicians.
Okay, and I understand we now have David Pearson with us, the president and CEO of TORCH, Texas Organization of Rural and Community Hospitals. David, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, fantastic. So you are trying to figure out how we can, stop the bleeding we have with the rural hospitals, and how are you going to do that?
Well, the same way we've been doing it, trying to advocate on behalf of all the rural community hospitals across the state. It's a big job. As you know, recently we've seen an uptick in closures, but this has happened before. Back in the 80s, we had 200 hospitals close. In the 90s, 29. In the 2000s, only 9. So the fact that we're up to 15 now gives us serious concern, and it shows a growing trend as far as the financial stability of these facilities.
So are you talking to state lawmakers and making them aware of the situation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are active at both the state and national level, trying to make sure our elected officials understand what's at risk, both from a healthcare standpoint and, as Billy pointed out, from an economic standpoint. Rural community development is an important component of the economic survivability of rural communities, and healthcare is a major contributor to that. So we're always taking every opportunity we can to visit with our elected officials and policymakers here in our state and across the country. We have an active footprint at the national level as well. The big concern right now is that these elected officials, they weren't in office during the 80s. They didn't see the chaos that ensued when we had so many hospital closures at that point in time. And they're trying to develop policy that saves cost and improves quality, but they can't, what we feel is, they can't do that at the risk of not allowing our rural residents to have access to care.
Okay, we're going to take another break. Our phone lines are open. We've got some callers here. We will get them on the air when we come back. The number is 210-614-8980. As we talk about rural hospitals, as they are in crisis, particularly in Texas and across the South, where the Affordable Care Act, where we did not expand Medicaid, which was available. And we'll take these calls. So this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davis. When you go out to the country, out the rural parts of Texas, isolationism, that's part of the charm. It's part of the beauty of being out there. But it's also, there's a downside to the isolation because you're far removed from healthcare, emergency care, if something bad should happen to you. And you're becoming even more isolated as we're seeing more hospitals, rural hospitals, close down in recent years. We're talking about how to reverse that trend, what needs to be done, at least making people aware that this is happening. And even if you don't live out in these rural areas, this should be scary to anyone who cares about our fellow Texans, because we don't want people just to be, you know, thrown out to the wolves, do we? So give us a call if you got a question or comment about how we can help bring the rural healthcare crisis to the forefront. The number is 210-614-8980. With us is David Pearson, President and CEO of Torch, Texas Organization of Rural and Community Hospitals. And Billy Bell is with us from the Hondo Hospital and our phone lines. Let's get a caller in with Harmony. Harmony, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Yes, I experienced the Rural Community Access Hospital this year. I was hired at an acute hospital in Killeen, and they used their transfer policy to push me to their sister hospital in Lampasas. And the administrator said she wanted to increase their therapy minutes so they could get accreditation, because the hospitals were going through these accreditation status. And I did not go there and sit and wait for a physician assistant to drop evals on me to certify the patients so they could keep the patients in the beds, because that's a source of revenue. Medicare will pay 100% the first 20 days. So if these rural hospitals don't have these rehab programs, they're forced to transfer, push out to the local community nursing home. So there's a lot of ethical issues, legitimate need for services that are bringing revenue, but also put the burden on the people who support the service to certify and to participate in this so that the hospitals can remain active.
All right, Harmony, thank you for telling us about all that. We appreciate it. So, David Pearson, tell us what's your reaction to Harmony's story?
Well, it's hard for me to relate specifically to that situation. I know that in a lot of cases, a small rural hospital, low-volume facility, they don't have a lot of patients. The patients, for the most part, aren't very acute. What we experience is that the patients locally don't access the services that they could be receiving in town, often do seek services in the next community, the larger community down the road. And that's a problem for small rural hospitals, because they really do need to retain as much of their market as they possibly can. Likewise, some patients have to be moved to a higher level of care, and it's important for those patients then, when they are in a therapy situation or in a, what we call a swing bed in a critical access hospital, where they're actually receiving more therapy than they are acute care services, they should come back to the rural community. It's where their family and friends are. It actually enhances the healing process for them to be back home. And so it's a give and a take. from the standpoint of which services should be taken care of in the rural communities and which shouldn't be. But the most important thing is that without that volume there, it definitely puts our facilities at risk. We need to encourage as many people to shop locally, if you will, as we possibly can.
Looking at a study that was released in October, it says rural hospitals on average have done better at avoiding the spread of hospital-acquired conditions and have scored higher in Medicare's value-based purchasing program than their urban counterparts. So rural hospitals often beat urban hospitals on quality. David Pearson.
Yeah, that recent research is, you know, obviously very gratifying for a small rural facility. I know, for instance, in Hondo, they work very hard with their patient care team, the leadership at the facility, to make sure that they're doing everything they can to improve on their metrics, to take care of their patients, to provide the best possible quality care that they can, given the size of their facility. Again, we're not going to be able to do everything that a large urban hospital could do, but what we're seeing is that that a smaller patient care team that's closer to the patients, that interacts with those patients at the community level on a much more regular basis. They're not just a random patient coming into that facility. We are able to deliver a very patient-friendly service, and we are seeing now, based on the data, that approach is paying off. A community-based service that you'll get in a rural area really is equivalent to what you might find in an urban center.
So, Billy Bell, big city care doesn't mean better care, huh?
That's true. I think it speaks to care coordination in the rural hospitals. I mean, we're taking care of our families, our neighbors, people that we see at the grocery store. And so, you know, if we can keep patients in their communities with their primary care physicians and coordinate that care locally, I think overall the quality improves.
We hear the story about the Hill Country Memorial up in Fredericksburg and about how it was a hospital that was in trouble, and then they turned it around through sort of a moonshot effort by trying to fix things. And so, David Pearson, do you know about this story over at the Hill Country Memorial?
Yeah, we've seen the media reports. I have more recent history with the hospital there in Fredericksburg, and I can say unequivocally that that is a first-class facility. Whatever the impetus was for an improvement in patient engagement and quality and a focus on really making sure that the patients there were being served in the best possible way, it's paid off, and that facility now has reached Malcolm Baldrige quality status. So they're doing all the right things, and I think they are just one example of many across the state where you're seeing committed individuals, very well-trained, highly professional physicians, physician assistants, and other nurses taking care of patients, and we're starting to see them receive the credit for those services that they deserve.
And they say that if you're going to get a hip replacement, that's the place to go, Hill Country Memorial.
Yeah, they have a very specialized program there. They kind of watch that patient from start to finish, and it's one of those innovative programs that I think we're going to see more and more of in rural facilities. Like Billy said, it's a community-based model. It's based on primary care and watching those patients from start to finish, and I think we can do that on a very consistent basis across a number of facilities here in Texas and across the country.
Okay, Claudia has called in. Claudia, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
So I'm a family nurse practitioner, and there was a program in Texas to provide health care for the rural health communities using family nurse practitioners. I'm not sure if it's still funded or not. There's also a lot of research that shows that nurse practitioners provide the same quality of care as physicians, numerous studies, as well as a recommendation from the Institute of Medicine that to use nurse practitioners to satisfy shortages in different areas. Many people see nurse practitioners already, and in the cities I know, and in the country as well. And we come in different specialties, family, women's health, pediatrics, acute care, to name a few, geriatric. And so, you know, what you might want to do is combine, like, a family practice physician and a women's health nurse practitioner or pediatric nurse practitioner and a pediatrician and a family nurse practitioner to have a little bit broader coverage for the whole lifespan of the individuals in that community.
All right, Claudia, I think we got your point. And so, David Pearson, nurse practitioners, are they the solution?
Well, they're a valuable component of the healthcare system. We do, as Billy noted, rely heavily on mid-level practitioners to deliver probably a majority of the primary care, although we don't want to take anything away from our physicians. Those physicians that are dedicated to serving rural areas are invaluable and harder to come by. But back to the point about family nurse practitioners, they're a very adaptable provider type. They do all sorts of various and sundry services from primary care, family, pediatric. We would not be able to specialize and probably not be able to deliver as much care to nearly as many people without some reliance on those providers.
So in Washington, D.C., the new Trump administration and the Republican-controlled House and the Senate are in agreement that they want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Does this mean that we're going to see a tidal wave of uncompensated care hitting these rural hospitals, and it's going to be more than they can bear? David Pearson.
Well, there is a great risk of that at the national level. And I think the AHA and the Federation of American Hospitals have put forth some research that shows that there's a rather large deficit that's looming out there, depending on how we agree to deal with the ACA, whether it's a repeal and delay or a repeal and replace. If we do it in an organized manner, obviously we'll all be much better off. If we do it in a disorganized manner, the risk is not only financial, but the reduction in coverage and reduced access to care for many millions of Americans would be significant. Here in Texas, there have been a lot of people who have accessed care through the federal marketplace. We didn't expand Medicaid. So the impact here might be a little muted, but it'd still be significant enough. And it's one of those things where with everything in such a fine balance, we really can't afford any sort of drastic changes financially for these small facilities, because that's the kind of thing that can tip the balance for them and unfortunately put them in a situation where they can't sustain themselves.
And Billy Bell, very quickly, you can't turn people away. Uncompensated care, that's got to be a problem.
That's true, and it's something that all the rural hospitals struggle with. We do not turn anyone away, so I agree with David that we need to, whatever happens on the national or state level, do so cautiously and at a very slow pace.
All right, I want to thank our guest, David Pearson, the CEO and president of the Texas Organization of Rural and Community Hospitals, TORCH. And what is your hashtag, David? I know you're doing a lot of tweeting.
Well, our Twitter handle is TORCHNET.
All right, and you're definitely trying to get the message out there, letting people know that what's at stake. And Billy Bell, Vice President of Operations at Medina Regional Hospital in Hondo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.